Well, trust me, it is not our most favorite thing to do, which is present controversial topics, but it is our favorite thing to do to help stir conversations and to help you think about interventions that may be worth adopting. Now remember, it's very easy when the whole burden of data goes one way for efficacy and proven value, that's easy to adopt, or the other, which clearly shows that treatment or intervention XYZ doesn't work, is easy to walk away from that. But it's the stuff in the middle, where there is data, but some of the data is conflicting, that's up to physician and clinician interpretation. And remember, our basic motto here always has been, if there's an intervention that's very low risk, but has the potential for high clinical yield and benefit, then it's perfectly okay to use it. Well, that's exactly what we're going to present today, because we're going to get into a subject here that's been looked at since the 1980s. We're talking about the effect of adrenergic receptors on the myometrium and how to manipulate them for labor success. Well, that sounds deep, doesn't it? No, it's not all that deep. Because the other way of saying it is there data to support propranolol's use for stalled labor or for labor induction? Now, when you first hear that, you're like, well, why would propranolol do anything? Easy, because it's a beta blocker. And if we used beta 2 agonists to help relax the uterus, then why not use a beta blocker to help stimulate the uterus? Yeah, there's actually data for that. That's level one. But there's also level one data that shows it does not work. So this is something that is going to be he said, she said. Yeah, there's evidence on both sides, which we'll come back at the end of the episode to our motto. Is it high risk and does it have the ability to help? Because in this case, this is very low risk. It is not high risk at all. And it does have the possibility for this thing to work. And it makes biological sense. Remember, that's the third adage, right? Is it safe to use? Can it work? And does it make biological sense? Well, blocking adrenergic receptors on the myometrium absolutely makes sense since their stimulation can cause uterine relaxation. We're going to cover both sides of the argument here, all right? Now, to be very clear, this is not an ACOG recommended first-line treatment for dysfunctional labor, but some have proposed that it be considered because, again, low risk, potentially high yield. But for the articles that show that this works as level one evidence, there are others as recent as 2023 that show, yeah, probably didn't do anything. So it's going to be the prototypical he said, she said. It's something that's going to get us all thinking about this. And to be very clear, if you want to know where I stand on this, I'll tell you as we get towards the end of the episode. So can propranolol prevent C-section? Can propranolol help with labor? Well, we're going to tackle that very loaded question in this episode. Just trying to keep everyone up to date on evidence-based practice because medicine moves real fast. This is Clinical Pearls.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Yep, let's put propranolol on our little Clinical Pearls trial in this episode. So first, we're going to take the plaintiff stance, seeing if it's guilty of rescuing labor when it's in danger of being called a section, or if it's innocent of all charges. Look how stuff works. I've had it on our list. I mean, I'm looking at our docket here of what we usually present. I said docket. I'm just sticking with this whole law thing in this episode. Do you notice that? We don't have a docket. We have a list. We have an agenda. Man, like I'm believing my own theme here. Yeah, that's weird, huh? I said docket. That's so bizarre. But we've had this topic on our agenda since we first saw it come out in the Green Journal, July of 2023. So in the summer of last year, I'm like, oh, man, that's super interesting. We should put that on the list. And then, of course, stuff happens and it gets bumped. But I'm looking at this. I originally put this to discuss in August of 2023. And what pushed me over was that I received a Facebook message on January the 16th, the day that we're taping this today, that said, hey, what about propranolol and labor? She actually asked about calcium carbonate as well, which, let me just be very honest here, super anecdotal. That makes sense too, but there is zero human studies that giving Tums tablets in labor can help. Now, does that make biological sense? Absolutely. Is that harmful? No, not at all. So can it help? Yeah, the data doesn't, we don't have any evidence of that. That's all been basically bench studies and very anecdotal stuff, all right? So, you know, remember our three, we go back to that three basic prong approach, right? Can it hurt? In this case, like propranolol, not really, unless you got a super low heart rate, which you got to watch. And do it slow, guys. Remember, it's 1 mg/mL if you're going to do it as an IV push. 1 mg/mL push at a time. So it takes, you know, 2 minutes or so. So is it harmful? Can it potentially work? I mean, yeah. And then three, is it rooted in biological principle? Does it make anatomical, physiological sense? Okay. So when the data is conflicting, those are the three things to ask. All right. Hey, if we do this, is it going to hurt somebody? Because you don't want to do that. Second, does it at least have the potential to help with some evidence? Does some evidence say yes? Because you got to have that. And then three is, does it make biological sense? Or are we just grabbing straws here? So if you can answer yes to all three of those things, is it low risk? Yes. Is there some evidence that maybe it helps? Yes. And does it make biological sense? Then try it, as long as you have shared decision making, all right? But all to say is that what pushed me over to do this, because we were set to schedule to record today anyway, so I bumped what we were normally going to talk about, which I found kind of boring, honestly. The new medication that's out in being tested for syphilis, which is linezolid, seemed to plop in its phase 3 study. But there's issues with that study as well. I mean, it was underdosed. They didn't use that medication for long enough. It wasn't even in women. It was all in men. Not that that matters, but there are some gender differences to pharmacokinetics. So I was going to talk about linezolid's belly flop in treating early syphilis. And I may do that maybe later on in this week, but I bumped that to do this one. All to say is I should have done this in August 2023, but when I got this question from one of our podcast family members, hey, can I get propranolol for labor? My short answer is, yeah, you can. I don't know how much that's going to help, but as long as her heart rate's not really low and it's part of shared decision-making, there's evidence for, evidence against, I'm like, we should put that to trial. Hence why we're doing this now. Yeah, this is nothing new. The whole concept of beta adrenergic receptors and the effect of beta adrenergic activity on the human malmetrum has been a thing for a long time. I mean, that's why terbutaline was given as a tocolytic. Stimulation of beta adrenergic receptors on the uterus is a uterine relaxer. So by the exact reverse thinking, if you could then block beta adrenergic receptors in the human malmetrum, wouldn't it make sense then that you would help stimulate contractions? Again, this is nothing new. An article that kind of went through this basic science was in the Gray Journal back in 1985, and the title was Beta Adrenergic Receptors in Human Malmetrum During Pregnancy. Changes in the number of receptors after beta-mimetic treatment. Now, even though that was for tocolytic therapy, it made the case that beta-adrenergic receptors kind of get second light to oxytocin receptors in labor, especially at term, right? And it, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, the main driver of uterine contractility, of course, is the foot on the gas, which is oxytocin's activity based on its receptor on the myometrium. However, if you take your foot off the brake at the same time, which is removing the beta adrenergic stimulation, potentially the two could be synergistic. Well, that at least is the thought, and it's a good thought, especially since the ARRIVE trial came out. We've had an increase in number of inductions, and the last thing we want to do is kick the number over for increased number of C-sections. Now, yes, I understand that the ARRIVE trial did not show an increased rate of cesarean section with induction of labor, even in those NOLIP patients. But not everybody agrees with that. Some studies on a population level have actually shown a slight increase in C-section with elective induction at 39 weeks. Not all of them, but some have. Those have mainly been more retrospective, but it still makes that whole argument a little controversial. Oh man, I've opened up that can of worms, so at least I know I should give you at least a couple of references that have shown the opposite of the ARRIVE trial regarding cesarean section. Remember, ARRIVE showed no increase in C-section rate with elective induction at 39 weeks, but there have been others, as we've just stated, who've shown the opposite, and one of those reports came out of a database review out of the state of Michigan. In this study that came out of the American Journal of Perinatology, overall, as a group without sub-analysis, those who underwent elective induction were actually more likely to have a cesarean section compared to those who had expected management. It was 30% C-section compared to 24% with expectant management. Yeah, again, that's a little conflicting because that's opposite what the ARRIVE trial showed. This was published online on February 2023, and the lead author was Lisa Kane Lowe, followed by Daniel Morgan. And even though that was still recent, just February 2023, there was one that came out this month in January 2024 out of Australia, out of Victoria. The title of this was Induction of Labor and Cesarean Birth in Low-Risk Nulliparous Women. This was a retrospective cohort study, end quote. And similar to the Michigan paper, they found that the odds of cesarean birth actually increased with induction of labor compared with expectant management. So again, there's some study differences here. There's some differences in the patient populations, but I'm just making the point, not that I disagree with the ARRIVE trial, not at all. I mean, ACOG still recognizes that. ARRIVE trial did have some issues, like 70% of patients who were offered enrollment declined. So did that skew the results? But all to say, it found value that at 39 weeks, there was benefit here for induction of labor. And that's exactly what we've seen. There's been a almost near global increase in the rates of induction of labor at 39 weeks electively. All right. Again, everything has its place and it comes down to shared decision making, but we should never shame a patient for not doing it because some evidence, again, done with a different statistical study design, has shown maybe it doesn't result in a decreased C-section rate. We've got the Michigan paper and then, of course, this one from Victoria, Australia. Not poking the bear for the ARRIVE trial at all. And we've done that as an episode many times on this channel. But I'm just making the point here that if we're going to be doing induction of labor, maybe we really should be looking at the most effective way to do that. Yes, doing pre-induction cervical treatment, cervical ripening, the Bishop score, all of that, super vital. But wouldn't it be nice if there was a diagnosis of dysfunctional labor or prolonged latent phase to try something as a Hail Mary pass just to see, hey, is this thing if low risk and potentially could rescue this dysfunctional labor? Should we try it? Okay. Now, I am not out of my mind. I'm not making up stuff. Okay. There is data and I'm going to present this as if in a court. Okay. So I'm going to give first the plaintiff side, which is saying propranolol is guilty, definitely guilty of causing rescue. And I'm going to give you that data. And then we're going to do the defense where propranolol says, hey, Don't look at me. I'm innocent in all this. You stick with your oxytocin, I'm out. I'm innocent of this. That's the one, the studies who say it does not work. So yes, there is plenty of data to make both cases. And I know what you're thinking. Wait a minute, Choppa. That's where systematic reviews come in. If you've got data all over the points on a scatter plot graph, you're absolutely right. This is one of the main values of having a systematic review or meta-analysis. Well, that was done back in 2015. Now, that came out as an EPUB in 2015. It got published in print in April of 2016 in Archives of Gynecology and Obstetrics. So, yeah, that's been looked at. And I'm going to give you that evidence as we go. Okay, I'm not going to spoil it right now, but all to say, if we're going to be doing induction of labor, something to consider. I will tell you again, remember at the end where I stand on this, whether I'm for it or against it, but I want you to decide. The whole purpose of doing this episode, as we said at the intro, sometimes it's easy when all the data shows a predominance of the evidence and it's going to be either guilty as charged or innocent, and you can say it's crystal clear. Sometimes medicine is not clear and things land in the middle. That's exactly what we're presenting here for propranolol as a client. Okay, so is it guilty of causing rescue for dysfunctional labor? There's level one evidence that it can do just that. And then there's also evidence that says it's absolutely innocent of those claims. Truth lies somewhere in the middle. So I just wanted to lay the kind of the foundation here. But if we're all thinking that elective induction at 39 weeks absolutely reduces the risk of C-section later, not everybody agrees with that. That's all the only point I wanted to make about that. Oh, wait, before I leave that, a quick shout out to one of our residents, Cameron. Cameron sent me that link on the Australia paper about the retrospective study with induction of labor at 39 weeks, not reducing C-section rates. So, Cameron, exactly what you're supposed to be doing. Good for you. You found this. That just came out on January the 3rd, 2024. Yeah, we can do that as another future journal club. So, excellent to you. That's exactly what you should be doing, looking for data, looking for conflicts, and then try to reason them out the best way that the evidence allows. All right, ladies and gentlemen of the court, we will begin with our accusation first that propranolol is guilty of causing rescue of labor. How about that, huh? I should have been like in A Few Good Men.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Order in the court!
My goal here is to present recent evidence that is level one, that's an RCT, that shows that there may be some efficacy here for this medication to work, either as rescue or as a primary induction agent. All right. Now, if you notice some of the years that I'm going to give you, these are recent, and it really has come because of this whole ARRIVE trial induction of labor thing. So the first article that I'm going to talk about was published April 2023. Guys, that's just last year, obviously, out of BMC Pregnancy and Childbirth. All right. A nice journal. The title is A Pilot Study to Compare Propranolol and Misoprostol versus Misoprostol and Placebo for Induction of Labor in Prima Gravidas. This was a randomized, single-blind, placebo-controlled trial. Pretty good, right? I mean, at least it's a good study design. And it is. It's well done. And again, this just came out last year. So to be very clear, this were all NOLIPs. This was Cytotec by itself or Cytotec with propranolol. All candidates underwent induction of labor with 25 micrograms of vaginal Cytotec. Group 1 received 20 milligrams of oral propranolol, while group 2 received sugar pills as placebo. Candidates who responded successfully to induction were assessed for possible augmentation of labor by amniotomy or went on to oxytocin infusion. Now, the primary outcome was induction to delivery interval, and the secondary outcomes were the duration of the latent phase, the mode of delivery, obviously vaginal, operative vaginal or C-section, and Apgar score of the neonate. All right, let's cut to the chase here. The induction to delivery interval, mainly because of the effect on the latent phase, were both significantly shorter in the group that had both medications, the misoprostol and the propranolol, compared to misoprostol and placebo. the p-value there was significant at 0.02. All right, so that's the primary, right? So they seem to have a shorter induction to delivery interval. But what about C-section? Well, unfortunately, it didn't seem to have a benefit there. Quote, adding propranolol ended in fewer cesarean sections, yet this difference failed to reach statistical significance. And there was also no significant difference between the indications for cesarean section between the two groups. So, yes, it seemed to decrease the rate of C-section, but it wasn't, again, statistically significant. Now, we have to say something here about this study. These weren't all 39-week elective inductions. They were just people who presented, women who presented for induction for whatever reason. All right, so this was an outside the U.S. study, and some of the indications for induction included post-dates, obviously, therefore, not 39 weeks. It was pre-labor rupture of membrane, and as well as induction. So it wasn't simply induction of labor. It was those who, elective induction, it was those who needed induction overall, just, you know, that's not necessarily going to negate their results. Just want to be very clear. Don't want to mislead anybody. This wasn't a 39-week just elective induction. It was just women who were needing an induction, and they got randomized in a 1-to-1 ratio, either with Sedatec alone or a one-time dose of propranolol as an oral tablet. Well, after it's all said and done, they concluded, quote, propranolol, when used with misoprostol for induction of labor, results in augmentation of action of misoprostol and a significantly shorter induction to delivery interval, end quote. This was an Egyptian study. I find it interesting. Again, it just got published in the early part of last year out of BMC, Pregnancy and Childbirth. And before we leave this publication from BMC, yes, they did reach statistical power. They needed 128 total, about 64 in each group, and that's what they did. So they were able to randomize through their power calculation to meet a statistical significance. So thankfully, they did do a power calc, and yes, it was powered. All right, podcast family, bear with me for just this next reference, because I told you that we were going to hover until recent evidence, and that is absolutely true, except this one is kind of the outlier because it goes all the way back to 1996 out of Obstetrics and Gynecology, the Green Journal, all right? So this is not recent. This was 1996, but it is worth mentioning because I know one of the authors on it. I mean, this is Dr. Konitz, Andrew Konitz. Who was first author on this, which just goes to show, look how long people have been looking to try to maximize labor induction, okay? So the title of this was Randomized Trial of Oxytocin Alone and with Propranolol in the Management of Dysfunctional Labor. Okay, so this is from the Green Journal from back in 1996. With Andrew Konitz being the first author. So to be very clear, remember, this is the old Friedman curve. And for this, patients had to be active phase with dysfunctional labor, right? Not arrest of labor, because we all know what to do with that. So to be clear, nobody is proposing giving propranolol for arrest disorders. It's typically done either with an induction or for dysfunctional labor. So I find this publication worth mentioning for a couple of points. One, it's Andrew Konitz. Second, it goes back to 1996, so it's kind of historic. And then three, it's not oral medication. It was propranolol, 2 milligrams IV. Now, this was very different because here what these authors did is they gave 2 milligrams propranolol IV, okay, a slow IV push or an identical placebo if they were randomized to that, and they were given their continuous infusion of oxytocin, all right? And if it didn't work, if they did not have a kickstart back into a more functional labor pattern, then either the placebo or the propranolol dose was repeated in 1 hour, okay? So, hey, look, we gave it to you an hour ago, nothing's really happening, and there's no cervical change, then they had another dose, okay? So they could have two administrations. So patients that were deemed non-responsive at the end of that second administration of medication or to placebo were then delivered by C-section, okay? So this was an RCT. It did have a placebo control, but it was single site, okay? Not that that's bad. It's just it was a single site. And what they found was, this low-dose administration of IV propranolol, quote, in patients with dysfunctional labor, augmented with oxytocin, safely reduced the need for cesarean delivery, particularly among patients with inadequate uterine contractility, End quote. So in this, not only did it rescue labor, it prevented, obviously, a C-section. So again, 1996, you got to put that in perspective. It's single site. But this study from Andrew Connitz showed some value in IV propranolol. As we get ready to have opposing counsel give their arguments that it does not work based on level one evidence, I just want to leave you with a third RCT as we move up the timeline from the 1990s and get to 2014. This was out of an Iranian midwifery journal. This was a double-blind randomized trial that, again, used oral propranolol with oxytocin versus oxytocin only for labor induction. And what they found is it worked. But again, you see how you have all of these different approaches. And this is where some of the controversy lies. Is the best mode of treatment with an induction only? Is it only when they stall? Is it oral? Is it IV? And that's why, in addition to the arguments that we're about to make by opposing counsel, that this has not really stuck. Okay, so, and I'll tell you my perspective at the end. Okay, now, if you've kind of been hearing, you've been part of our family for a while, you know my basic motto, again, if it's low risk and it could potentially help, why not? I mean, if you've already put the patient on the C-section list, if you've already, you know, you're about to wheel her to the OR, as long as the maternal fetal condition are safe, if it's just for a dysfunctional labor issue, my stance, I'm telling you right now, I guess, is what can it hurt? Okay, now I don't like the oral, I'd rather do the IV so that you don't get into secondary absorption issues, knowing, of course, and I'm going to be very clear, that the data is exactly that, very unclear, but low risk, potentially high yield, maybe. It is conflicting. This publication from 2014 out of the Iranian midwifery journal found that it had some success. Quote, this study showed that oral propranolol is an effective agent in both shortening the labor duration and reducing the frequency of cesarean section, end quote. But of course, it's never that easy. Now, I am going to get into a meta-analysis that I need to get into here before we do the opposing counsel side, because the other articles that we're about to cover came after this meta-analysis, all right? So the meta-analysis was from 2016, and that was in Archives in Gynecology and Obstetrics, and it was a meta-analysis of randomized trials looking at this very issue. The problem is that there were very few studies, there were very heterogeneous stuff that I've already discussed, and so they said, yeah, it might could help, as I've said in previous podcasts, as my wife's relatives would say, it might could. She hates when I say that, but it's true. It might could. That's exactly what they concluded. Quote, propranolol's effect on the duration of the various stages of labor was underreported. However, evidence seems to support that it shortens the latent phase and possibly the total duration of labor. Firm results, however, are precluded due to the low numbers enrolled and due to the significant methodological heterogeneities of the included studies. End quote. That was, again, in Archives of Gynecology and Obstetrics 2016. But now we've got new data, which opposing counsel is now nipping at the heels to present. I have to be very clear here because I am the opposing counsel. I have there's no other person here. It's just me and Mike who's helping grab this, record this. So yeah, I am the opposing counsel. So here it is, guys. I'm just presenting both sides. You decide. The side that says no is much more recent, including multi-center RCT that shows it probably doesn't work. But does that totally negate the previous stuff? I don't know. I'm definitely not making that call. I'm just presenting it. And then you have the role as judge/jury to make your decision, right? So the first thing that I want to go over in a publication that showed it had no value was in AJOG, the Gray Journal's sister publication, which is the Pink Journal, so AJOG MFM. Okay, and this came out January 2021. Now, I'm going to give you one that came out in 2023, last year, but for right now, let's start with 2021. The title of this publication is Propranolol for Induction of Labor in NOLIPS, a double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled trial. Again, this was in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology, the MFM edition, which is the pink journal. So this came out of the Minnesota Perinatal Physician Group, as well as New York, and it's a good publication. Again, it's in the pink journal, just from 2021. And they've hooked onto this idea that, look, other people in the past have showed propranolol, maybe can be helpful. We need to know what's going on here. So they, again, chose the 2 milligram IV propranolol dose or an identical appearing saline placebo, okay? Now, this was given 30 minutes after starting induction of labor. And so let's figure out what happened. Again, this was a powered study. The primary outcome was time to vaginal delivery, with the secondary outcomes being the mode of delivery, durations of the phases of labor, time to full dilation, and any composite maternal morbidity or composite neonatal morbidity. Short of it is, in this study, there was no evidence that the addition of a one-time dose of propranolol helped to induce labor over placebo. Okay, and there was no evidence that it decreased time to delivery, no evidence that it reduced the rate of cesarean section. However, quote, propranolol significantly reduced composite maternal morbidity without adverse neonatal effects, end quote. So like, well, it didn't do anything for labor induction, but kind of reduced overall composite maternal morbidity without hurting the baby. So, little disappointing. This is why this is on the opposing counsel. So in this case, they made their point based on an RCT that was well done that propranolol is innocent of the charges that it can help with labor. Further evidence for propranolol's innocent in the labor game, we can look to the Green Journal in Obstetrics and Gynecology out of July of just last year, guys, of 2023, less than 1 year ago. There was an RCT titled, quote, efficacy of propranolol to reduce cesarean delivery in prolonged labor, end quote. This was a double-blind, placebo-controlled, randomized trial at two hospitals. So it is multi-site, right? Or at least dual-site. And unfortunately, what they found was, quote, there was no difference in cesarean delivery rates for patients who received propranolol compared with those who received placebo for management of prolonged labor, end quote. Again, this came out of the Green Journal in July 2023, just making the case that it sounds good, but while it doesn't seem to hurt, it doesn't seem to help. Now, I'm going to give you the third reference here, and then we're going to start bringing this together. Before I give you our last reference, which came out January 2023, so just 1 year ago, this was out of the Gray Journal, the American Journal of OBGYN. This is the pro-labor trial, pro as in propranolol, so propranolol labor trial. Again, an RCT. I have to say, I really wanted this to work. I mean, I'm like, man, if this thing could be so easy that we can just give one shot of propranolol and that's it, then here we go. And we're going to get more data that's that builds on the historic ones. All right. Remember, it doesn't negate the fact that there is data on the other side of the council, other side of the court that says, hey, this seems to work. But there's an equal amount of evidence that says that it does not. So this actually came out of AJOG. It is a randomized controlled trial of propranolol in nulliparous patients with prolonged labor. This is the pro-labor trial, okay? And let's just get to the cut to the chase here. The short of it is, as you can guess, obviously we're on this side of the argument. Quote, we found that propranolol administration did not shorten the time to delivery or increase vaginal delivery in nulliparous individuals with a prolonged latent labor course. Our findings do not support the use of propranolol for prolonging labor in nulliparous patients undergoing induction at term, end quote. Bummer, I know. All right, so what have we done here, guys? It's just I want to be very clear because it's our purpose here to be evidence-based. And the evidence here is both sides, but the more recent evidence shows that propranolol is likely innocent. Now, It sucks. I get it. But let me now relate this as we start to wrap this up back to our motto. I do find that this potentially has a role with shared decision making. And we can't lie to ourselves that the data is firm. It is not. It is absolutely not. It is conflicting and controversial. That's why ACOG does not use this as a, hey, by the way, before you go into a C-section, consider this. It does not. So I want to be very clear. This is not ACOG. Nor is it SMFM guidance. This is just raw data from the press, from the literature on both sides that I'm presenting to you. Remember, you are judge and jury. Now, in my take of this, in my interpretation of this as court reporter, boy, my analogies are just spot on, aren't they? I mean, this is good. I mean, it's like I've got Law and Order in my head. And what a great show SVU was, huh? I mean, I don't know. I liked it. It's, of course, detectives probably look at that stuff and like, that never happens. And I'm sure attorneys are like, yeah, that's not going to happen. Same way that I look at medical shows and I'm like, really? Really? We're going to have the neurosurgeon perform the C-section because apparently there's no OBGYN in the hospital. I mean, y'all get what I'm saying, right? So it's all just suspension of disbelief. But anyway, all to say, yeah. Law and Order, that was a kick-ass show. So as we're getting ready to close this, it's definitely not mainstream. So let me give you the three take-homes. Should you be offering propranolol to every single patient with dysfunctional labor and with every induction of labor? No, please don't do that. I mean, it's not integrated as mainstream practice. However, can it have a role? Is it possible to use this as a last remedy with patient-informed consent and in proper documentation? And the way that I would document, guys, I document my booty off. I mean, I always do. I mean, down to the reference, because I never want it to be something construed as my opinion. So I'm very, very type A, and I put references in my assessment. No, I don't go back like a whole bibliography, but I say, according to ACOG's committee opinion number 731, I'm doing this intervention because of this guidelines stance. Or in line with, you know, ACOG's practice bulletin ABC, we have elected to perform this and the patient is aware. So it's all about proper documentation. And for something like this, I would be very clear in the documentation because you don't want to be, you know, going through peer review for something that's not in an ACOG guidance, but I would say based on conflicting data in the literature and shared decision making, we offer this as a last remedy approach before going to C-section. As maternal and fetal condition allows and is stable, we will recheck the cervix, say, in 1 hour to see if there's some progress. So there's stuff that is out there, guys, that, again, is low risk, potentially could help, but the problem becomes when we start believing our own press, right? So if you're going to do that, make sure that you tell the nurses, hey, this is conflicting, it's unclear, but I'm throwing a Hail Mary here because the patient really wants to avoid a C-section and has asked if there's anything else. So at that point, I'm withholding some potential evidence because there is data that says it could help, but definitely not mainstream. So this is why it's called shared decision-making. Remember, guys, we've talked about this. Whenever the data is conflicting, it's always shared decision-making. But I don't want to give any illusions here. Is this part of a national guidance or an international FIGO, you know, stance? No, absolutely not. Is there data on both sides of the argument? Yes. Is there more recent data that it does not work? Absolutely. And it's been as recent as 2023. But as part of shared decision making, and the reason we're presenting this to you now on this episode is I want you to go and talk with your team, use this maybe as a journal club or as a unit exercise and talk about it. And if you're going to do it, then have a standardized way to do that. All right. So maybe put this in as your P&P so that people aren't doing crazy stuff out of left field and give people the information that, while controversial, some have argued that it may be helpful. So, can propranolol rescue labor? Maybe, but maybe not. And also, before we leave this topic, remember that labor is very complex. And while blockage of beta adrenergic receptors has a role, stimulation of oxytocin receptors has a role, use of prostaglandins has a role, there's so many roads that converge in one highway that get the patient to successful destination, which is vaginal birth, to say that one street alone and fixing one, paving one street really well is going to fix everything is why this is not mainstream. Because we don't have a magic bullet where we can give a patient this medication and automatically guarantee their vaginal birth. Obviously, that does not exist. And so while propranolol has some appeal and it is linked in biological evidence, we know what beta adrenergic stimulation does. It gives uterine relaxation. So by default, if you take away that effect, it would help with contractility in cases of prolonged labor that are specifically hypotonic. It definitely, I'll be very clear, it is definitely not mainstream. I've asked Mike to lead us out in the Law and Order theme. I mean, that was just a great theme, wasn't it? I mean, that was just cold. Like, I could listen to that in my car going to work. I don't know. Maybe I could. Maybe I couldn't. Anyway, no, I do not have any financial benefits of playing the Law and Order song. I don't get any gibbies from that. They are not a sponsor, so I do need to say that. But I hope you found this interesting. Again, is this 100%? Is this a solid thing to use? No, but I hope you found it interesting as a point of discussion around the water cooler. All right, podcast family, that's all I have. So as always, we're thankful for you. We're glad you're part of our podcast community, and we'll see you on another episode of Clinical Pearls.